the more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Good morning and welcome to this month's edition of Voices for the Animals. I'm your host, Michelle Coppola. You know, right now is a particularly difficult and stressful time for anyone who is involved in pet animal welfare and animal sheltering. Fallout from the pandemic and inflation has resulted in a record number of animal surrenders, pet abandonment, and lower rates of adoption, too. While we do have many very dedicated people working in animal sheltering and rescue here in Portland, our own Multnomah County Animal Shelter has been problematic for a long time, even well before the pandemic. A recent series of media reports shed light on long-standing issues at the shelter that included substandard animal care, a lack of transparency and trust between employees, volunteers, and management, and an absence of consistent operational procedures and poor record-keeping. Problems that date back to about 2016. Staff shortages and overcrowding forced the shelter to close for a week in January, and as a result, the new Multnomah County Chair, Jessica Vega Pedersen, forced the shelter to reopen to the public and launched a five-month review of shelter operations back in February. Now, last month on Voices for the Animals, I spoke with two longtime volunteers from the shelter who have been vocal about the issues there and have been at the forefront of demanding change. On today's show, I'll be speaking with Erin Grayheck, the newest director of Multnomah County Animal Services. I need to note that last week, Chair Vega Pedersen sent out a press release with an update on the shelter, and the news was not good. Most of the objectives to improve the shelter have not been addressed, and not much progress has been made to improve operations. This interview, by the way, was conducted before that progress report was issued. So, Erin, thank you so much for being willing to talk with me today, as I know the demands on your time are great. You were officially named the Director of Animal Services in September, and while I know the pandemic has made hiring difficult nationwide in all fields, the shelter staffing problems predate the pandemic by many years. I was hoping that maybe you could provide some insight as to why there's been such a problem hiring and retaining staff at MCAS.
I can try. Most of that does predate me stepping into this role. And so I'm then kind of sharing what I've heard. I think that there have been some challenges in terms of workload. I think there have been some challenges for staff around what feels like a successful onboarding and training plan. I think that part of the challenges have been more systemic in nature. And while that does, some of the issues predate the pandemic, I would say that the pandemic has not helped in any way.
Sure.
Much of what we're seeing in terms of staffing crises in the animal welfare industry at this moment in time, there is some impact that's specifically related to the pandemic, and a national veterinarian and certified vet tech shortage that is experienced by many animal welfare partners here in the Portland metropolitan area. I'm part of a group, the Animal Shelter Alliance of Portland, that meets regularly, and, you know, it's an experience that all of those partners are having. And I think some of it, we see animal welfare as a pretty high burnout field.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause as you said, it's hard work. And what I've acknowledged with my staff and that I have seen for myself just since I've been here is this work is head work and heart work. And like physical. So it's all the things, right? And I think that that's impactful as well.
As you know, I had the opportunity to speak extensively with two longtime volunteers from the shelter, and I want to address some of their specific concerns about the shelter with you. MCAS stopped taking animals for a week back in January because of a lack of staffing and overcrowding. Now, volunteers told me that just before that, in the last 2 weeks of December, the shelter put out a social media post about how they were full and asking for fosters and adopters. And at that time, you received about 60 adoption applications for animals. What they told me was that those applications just sat. They were never processed or even looked at for over 2 weeks. To your knowledge, is that accurate? And if so, why did that happen?
I would have to double check on that figure. There was a period of time when we have a primary set, and one of the staff classifications that has been challenging to fill, although we're getting closer, is Animal Care Tech 2. And those are the staff who process applications. And we had one staff person who was the primary adoptions processor, the online applications, and they were out on vacation for a few days over the Christmas holiday. But when folks got back in, then we really pushed through all of those applications. And so every single one of those applications was processed, reviewed. And again, I don't remember a number. I don't remember the 60 number, but I could get that information.
I mean, I would just think, I mean, even though the person was out on vacation and you've had trouble filling that role, I guess my question would be, knowing that the shelter was so crowded and so full, wouldn't processing those applications have been really a priority that other members of staff could have covered?
I will say this, and just being thoughtful, I think, absolutely processing adoption applications was essential at that time. And one of the impacts that we've seen that have been kind of the challenge of this staffing crisis is having to balance a variety of duties that are assigned to our staff. And so a challenge that we were facing, especially at that particular time, was because we did have a large number of animals in the shelter, of course we want to get applications processed to get them adopted out into their forever families. And the first thing that we have to do every day is that care and feeding of the animals. And so it becomes even more challenging when your census numbers are high and your staffing is low, because that's the first thing you have to do. I mean, that's the fundamental thing, is that care and feeding of the animals. And so it was challenging to redirect staff to process adoption applications because their days were very full in care and feeding of animals.
I was also told by these volunteers, and it's been in media reports as well, that on multiple occasions, volunteers have brought animals with medical conditions who were likely or obviously in pain to the attention of staff, only to have those animals go for days and even weeks without pain management or care. I'm thinking here of Daisy May, who was in one of the articles in the Oregonian, and also the dog who went for days and days with a nail in her foot unaddressed by the medical team. Some of these allegedly happened while you were manager or interim manager. Can you explain why this has gone on
exactly that way? We do have a communication board where volunteers are able to highlight either behavioral or medical concerns that they have about the pets, and that information is reviewed and brought forward to our medical team. And so I'm not aware of situations where pets have sat for days and weeks without having medical concerns addressed. We also, in our data system, have the ability to flag a pet for veterinarian review, and our animal health team pulls those reports regularly and reviews those. There are some days in the week where we don't have a veterinarian on site. And although, like Dr. Romney, she's here 3 days a week, and I don't have a veterinarian regularly filling those other shifts, we do have relief vets who do, health and welfare checks and follow-ups. So I think we're trying to use all the systems we can. And I also know volunteers come to the volunteer coordinator, they come to me, they go to animal health themselves to ask questions and advocate for the pets.
So I do want to talk about this review of shelter operations that's being done by the Multnomah County Commission. Chair Vega Pedersen said when she announced the review that while it would take place over a five-month period, that she wouldn't wait to make some changes and improvements at the shelter where it was needed before the review was complete. Can you tell me in the weeks since the review started what changes and improvements have been made at the shelter so far?
We've had some small success in filling positions, and that has helped. Our animal care tech 1 classification, and those are the folks that do the bulk of the care and feeding of the animals, that classification is now full for the first time. We have no vacancies in that classification, and that's the first time in probably a couple of years. So I think we're making slow and progress, but progress in staffing. And we have also made some improvements in our recruitment and hiring processes that help to expedite that. So those are a couple of things on that kind of administrative side. Additionally, we have, during that period of time where we did pause admission for healthy strays for that 1 week, we did put out the call for support from volunteers and fosters, and have seen an increase in number of foster providers from that call to action. And we've also increased our volunteer corps, and we've added jobs. In the past, there, like, we didn't have volunteers helping as much, for example, with cleaning of dog kennels. It's, you know, a harder, more physical job.
Right.
And requires a level of training. And so that's a thing that hadn't been done. And we have added that, which has really improved, I think, the workload for staff and made a difference for staff and pets. I think the other part in terms of the staff experience, and again, I like literally have not even met the past managers, so I can only tell my story. But one of the things I think that has helped improve staff morale has been she started on October 31st, our operations manager, Marion Cannell, and she brings over 12 years of experience in the animal welfare industry. And Marion and I are really engaged with our staff and are working hard to be very transparent with them, help them understand decisions that we're wanting to make and plans that we're, you know, in moving forward. We've changed some of our supervisory structure to balance out direct supervision and really focus on expertise of our management team that I think has been really helpful for our staff. I think opening to in-person adoptions and bringing in additional volunteers and a couple of temps while we're working on hiring for permanent positions has really helped our adoptions process be better. So those are some things.
Okay. Now, Multnomah County Animal Services is part of the Animal Shelter Alliance of Portland, and I'm aware that one of their stated missions is to aid in reducing the numbers of homeless pets in our community. I also know there's been a real nationwide shortage of veterinarians and vet techs, and because the shelter hasn't been able to hire a full-time vet, you've stopped doing spays and neuters there. Instead, you've gone to a voucher system so adopters can get their pets spayed or neutered after adoption. But what I'm understanding is that the redemption rates on those vouchers is really low, which contributes to the problem. How do you plan to better address that issue in the future?
There are a number of, I think, elements to a plan to address that. And actually, we are doing some spay and neuter here. And the voucher system was to try and broaden our capacity while we look for additional on-site veterinarian staff. We have added Oregon Humane Society, and their animal hospital have just signed on as a fourth vendor for that voucher, going to significantly help our capacity. And we have contract language in that contract as well to look at pre-adoption spay and neuter, and depending on what their capacity is. And then we are also continuing to actively recruit for veterinarians for both relief vets here as well as trying to hire that position that would cover the second half of the week. Really trying to have a number of approaches to address that situation.
I do want to talk a bit about euthanasia, which, of course, is a sad reality at municipal animal control shelters like yours, where you're required to take in every animal that's presented to you. That's in contrast, as a lot of people might not realize, to nonprofit shelters and rescues, such as the Oregon Humane Society, who do not usually take strays or seized pets or dangerous animals. One of the things the volunteers mentioned and that has been documented in the media coverage recently is an ongoing lack of transparency when it comes to the rationale for euthanasia of animals in your care. Both of those volunteers said that they're not opposed to euthanasia when it's necessary, but that there's no consistent policies or clearly documented reasons for a lot of the decisions that are made regarding euthanasia. Now, what I want to know is the shelter taking steps to improve transparency and communication regarding that? And if so, what exactly is being done?
Thanks for the question. And you're right. I mean, euthanasia, I think, is an incredibly challenging subject for folks to cover and understand. And I think the challenge is about transparency in communication of the decisions versus the process. And I think we have opportunities to figure out how to communicate with our volunteer corps about what our process is for making euthanasia decisions and what are all of the factors that we consider in a euthanasia decision and what elements are part of pathway planning and evaluation for animals in our care. I think that's probably the biggest challenge in that whole scenario that you describe. Our staff are very thoughtful in terms of when we make a euthanasia decision for either medical or behavioral considerations, and are working to make those decisions within a framework of what do we know about the animal, what things are we able to observe, during their time with us, what interventions or pathway approaches have we tried in terms of rescues or fosters or those things to try and address behavioral considerations. And then also, how we evaluate that in context of safety for staff and for potential adopters and for the pet. Those are all considerations that come into play when we're making decisions around euthanasia. And so it really is more about how can we do a better job with helping volunteers understand why a euthanasia decision is made and what our process is so that we can, we have trust building to do with our volunteer corps. If you've talked with some of them, then, I think that's a thing you're probably aware of.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing that we're aware of. And are working to rebuild and regain that trust that has suffered over a number of years. And I think the transparency and communication and the trust building are probably the biggest, pain points in that conversation with volunteers around the euthanasia decision.
Right, because the thing that I really got from talking with them is they just, of course, as you know, volunteers are vital to any shelter or rescue environment, and they're so invested in the animals, and they feel very shut out of this process that animals that they maybe have become attached to or have worked with all of a sudden disappear, and they're not able to get any answers, and there doesn't seem to be any consistency with regard to why some animals get put to sleep and why others don't. Some who have bite records get adopted out and others get put to sleep, and they don't understand that inconsistency. The other thing that they brought to my attention is that they feel like they should be able to be involved in that euthanasia process and that they're not allowed to give an animal a last walk outside or some special treats or be there to comfort them when the animal is euthanized, even if they've been long-term volunteers who are used to that process. Are there any plans to bring volunteers and make them more involved with that? And if not, why not? I do have to say that having worked so much in shelters myself, that it seems harsh to not allow them to do that, both for the dog and the cat and for the volunteer.
I hear you. And that does seem hard. And again, it goes to that head and heart work, right? And the truth is, I don't know. And I'm happy to bring it to my management team to explore if there's a way to do that and see if there are ways that we can learn from practices in other municipal shelters and organizations, you know, how we can do that within a framework of what's best practice in shelter medicine and shelter work.
All right. So what I'd like to know is, after so many years of the county commission and the shelter acknowledging problems and really doing nothing to address those problems, why should volunteers in the community have faith that this time is going to be different, that once the spotlight goes away, that there will be some accountability?
I think the plan that we've crafted in partnership with the chair and her staff in terms of reviewing all of those audit findings and documenting like what the findings were, what interventions were proposed at the time, what has been done, what hasn't, as well as looking at policies and procedures and how we capture those and how we train staff to those. I feel really good about the intentional focus that we're doing in all of those areas. We're going to be hiring an external, contracting with an external consultant to do community engagement with both animal welfare partners, people in the network, and the community at large to gather feedback. And both of kind of those bodies of work are going to inform a work plan that we're going to take before the Board of Commissioners for their approval for that work plan. And I think that there's a renewed commitment from the Board of Commissioners about monitoring that work plan, about holding me and our staff accountable to the completion of that work plan. The other thing that we're looking at doing is bringing in some administrative support around the project management of that work plan. I think one of the challenges, again, in the past, as I can tell, trying to look back at what has been done or not, is being able to actually really treat things as an intentional project and set performance measures and time frames for completion and really work with the staff and the management team around documentation and completion of that plan. I think there's commitment at the leadership level of Department of Community Services. There certainly is commitment from me personally about the development and monitoring and completion of that plan. And I think there's commitment from Chair Vega Peterson.
So finally, I did want to ask you, if people want to help the shelter at this point, I know you've been under the spotlight for quite a while now with all the media attention and so forth. If people really want to get involved and help the shelter, what are some things that they can do?
I continue to seek volunteers, and if folks have time and energy and the ability to give of their time and talent, people can apply on our website to volunteer. I think we also will need, especially moving into the spring and summer, an increase in folks who would be willing to foster pets, especially kittens. It's what people and animals, so you're going to know this as well. We're moving into kitten season.
Mm-hmm.
So we expect to see an increase in the number of stray kittens that come in. So people who would have the ability to foster neonatal kittens would be a great service to the shelter.
That was Erin Grayheck, the newest director of Multnomah County Animal Services, talking about the ongoing challenges and difficulties at our county shelter, as well as efforts to improve conditions and operations there. Now, since that interview was conducted, phase one of the county chair's review of the shelter has been completed, and this past Monday, Director Grayheck presented a briefing to the Board of Commissioners. She had this to say about the findings of that review so far.
The findings in phase 1A are sobering and include a tally of recommendations from the 2016 audit, the 2018 audit follow-up, the Dogs Playing for Life consultation. It's important to note that many of the recommendations marked as partially complete or incomplete have seen progress towards implementation or may be in process, but with an alternative approach. Significant areas remain to be addressed, including staffing and volunteer levels to meet national cleaning, feeding, and enrichment recommendations. This is an area corroborated by all sources reviewed. A key focus of this work has been to identify what is needed and hone in on how to move forward from here.
Once again, that was Aaron Grayheck, current director of MCAS, speaking to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. So I'd like to encourage anyone living in Multnomah County who cares about pets to continue reaching out to your county commissioner, and especially to County Chair Jessica Vega Pedersen, to let her know that this issue is a priority for you. Truly, keeping the pressure on our county leaders is the only way meaningful and long-lasting change is going to happen there. I've provided links to recent articles about the problems at the shelter, as well as a link to our county commissioners on the Voices for the Animals page at kbu.fm/voicesfortheanimals. Also, a podcast of this episode and part one of our series on the challenges at the Multnomah County Animal Shelter, where I speak with two longtime volunteers, can also be found there on the page. And that's going to do it for this month's edition of Voices for the Animals. As always, we enjoy hearing from you and invite you to keep up with us and the latest in animal welfare news and events right on our Facebook page. I'm your host, Michelle Coppola, and until next month, be kind to animals, to others, and most of all, to yourself.